Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We're very fortunate to have on a variety of guests who share their industry expertise and knowledge. Today is a second-time guest. It's been a little bit over a year. I think we'll do a lot of community conversations, some sports stuff. We'll see how we tie healthcare into it. I don't know if we will or not, other than dry January and fasting. We talked about that. Nathan Walter, the president of the Jacksonville Armada. Any other titles with the Armada or just president, boss, CEO?
I think water boy.
Water boy.
Cone collector.
Nathan, welcome back, man. I'm excited to have you. It's way more fun when I have friends on. Can I call you a friend now?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We golfed. I'm gonna give a shout out to my dad, Pops Pete. We golfed a couple weeks ago. That's the most fun round.
Pops Pete. What a legend.
We had a good time.
It was an incredible day, yes.
Welcome back. A lot has gone on in the last year with the Armada. Where do you want to start? Because we got a lot of notes here, a lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah, a lot to cover. It's been busy, to say the least. And, you know, it's always a journey with the Armada. I mean, it's 11 years of my life, and it keeps going. So I'm fortunate, thankful, but this year was certainly a busy year. Everything from starting off the year, it was our 10-year anniversary last year as well. So we kind of kicked off the beginning of last year with our 10-year anniversary. And then we had multiple announcements from a women's team to a pro academy to the stadium and so on. So
10-year anniversary, I forgot about that. That's awesome. Make it 10 years, you've committed 11 years of your life. What do you think the next 10 years look like?
Yeah, I mean, look, if someone has said to me 10, 15 years ago, like, hey, Nathan, you're going to be in this position. Jacksonville is going to be your home. You're going to be deep rooted into the community from business, philanthropic ways, you know, community, friends, et cetera, et cetera. I probably would have laughed and said, no.
I'll pass.
And, you know, the 10 years have flown by, and I'm so fortunate and I'm so thankful. And, you know, I get to meet cool people like you and make Northeast Florida my home.
So, yeah. We love it here, man. I talk about it. It's kind of hidden gem, and there's a lot of stuff going on. Sports is, I think, a huge part of the community, right? We're constantly looking for activities in the city. We have a baseball team, the Jumbo Shrimp, the Jags, obviously, that are about to be under construction. Let's talk about the stadium. That was a huge announcement. You closed on the land, what was that, December of 24?
Yeah, just before Christmas, actually. I think it was December 20th, which was the night of our holiday party. So it was hard to keep a tight, you know, lip, even though we closed, but we didn't want to release it. But, you know, it was cool to celebrate with. We had the development team out there who's been working on this project for 4 or 5 years. We had the fans out there, and, you know, everything happens for a reason. It was a very cool day.
Can you share the development company?
Yeah, so we, as part of our development team, obviously we have everything from architects.
That's Casper's, the architect.
Casper Architects, Eric Casper. Yeah, amazing people. Chris Densmore over there, and Andrew, the project manager. Gil Bain Construction Group with Adam Fiducci, Ryan Snow, Mark Harvey, incredible people. Our owner's rep, Stuart Green. And then we have obviously our civil engineer group, which is Waits and Moy, John and Ina over there, who have been incredible people. And of course, with all these projects, you need a legal team.
So yeah, they do the most
work. So Steve Debenow and Cindy Trimmer over at DMH&D, incredible people. We've just been very, very fortunate to have really good people around the project.
When is the groundbreaking?
Oof, the groundbreaking. The official ceremony groundbreaking will be announced here shortly. The good news is, though, we have mobilization and groundbreaking next week to get the land and the site secured. So, quote unquote, we're moving next week, but we'll be announcing the official groundbreaking here at some point shortly.
I like that. That's the big fancy one where you got the hard hats on, the gold shovels, you cut the ribbon. There's probably some local politicians out there smiling and shaking hands. We'll go out there and toast to you guys.
You'll be more than invited.
Again, we're going to call it football. I call it soccer still. I don't judge.
Might be
me.
The best football team in town.
Poking fun of the Jags pretty hard right now. Let's talk about it. So the men's team, the under 23 men's team, lost in the conference final.
Correct. Correct.
Was it a good run, a good team? What do you think next year looks like?
It was a good run. It was disappointing to lose in the final. If you know, we probably went into that final as favorites, and we go 1-0 up really early in the game, and you're thinking, all right, things are moving our way, and as football does sometimes, it kicks you in the backside. And
Or the front side, I was going to say.
Or the front side. I can go that straight here. Okay, great. Then yes, it certainly kicked us in the balls. And
I love it.
And, you know, the final didn't turn out the way we obviously wanted it, but it was really successful. They had a great year, and yes, the coaching staff were already working on this summer's team, and it's certainly a lot stronger, which is fantastic. So it was a good summer.
When you guys have a successful season like that, do you lose a lot of players because of the success, or do a lot of them hang around?
That's a great question, Trey, because actually we lost probably one of the best players on the second game. He went and signed professional in Atlanta.
That's
for
so
Atlanta
selfish.
United.
Yeah.
That's a victory for you guys, right?
That young man as well is from Jacksonville. Born and raised here, has been in one of our youth affiliate academies, JFC, from the age of 7. And went to high school here. And, you know, so it's cool to see those players now starting to have the opportunity to have a pro career. And we have a great picture of Ethan. He was the captain on the first game, and he's walking out. And we have just started what is called a grassroots community program called MLS Go. And the MLS Go children were dressed up in their MLS Go uniform, and he was leading them out onto the field. And then the next week he signs in MLS.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was a really cool moment for
That's a frame and hang on the wall stadium picture.
Yeah, sure is. It was one of those cool moments of like this young man who's come through the system, come through locally, and then plays for the Jacksonville Armada, has a cool moment with some young grassroots kids. And then next week he signed professional MLS.
I want to go back to the community thing in a second, but Trey mentioned, so if your team's stacked and good, you're going to lose players to MLS or wherever else they go. So how are you recruiting and bringing kids? This 23 and under team, shoot, we lost two midfielders. Where are you pulling the talent from?
Yeah, so now the strategy changes, right? Because of MLS Next Pro, our pro team that comes in 2026, we now get to keep all those players in-house. If they're good enough to sign professional, we'll keep them with the pro team. So, but to go back to your direct question of how do we recruit them, you know, we have a philosophy of 50-50. And that 50% philosophy is they're players here in Northeast Florida. They're players from local colleges, etc., players that have gone through the affiliate academies, then gone off to colleges across the nation, but come back during the summer. And then the other 50% is we generally go out and we recruit and scout the top talent we possibly can. Some of these are American players. Some of them are international players. And we bring them in over the summer, and we give them the best opportunity to thrive within our environment, be successful. And now, hopefully, now it will roll into, we'll be able to keep them in the system because we have the pro team.
So the recruiting side, I'm just curious, right? I always think of college football. You have recruiters for every college that are going to high school. How are you? Are people sending videos? Do you have Armada staff that are traveling to England or wherever it is? Like, how are you finding this talent outside of the States?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we live in a world of technology now, which is great. So there's some software that is phenomenal, and we're able to literally, Google a player, and all of these data points will come up, all of their videos will come up. So we use that system a lot. But if there's a player, you know, certainly when we travel to cities and we know there's games going on, then we'll head over and scout players, watch players. But just think of it, we have tentacles everywhere.
Yeah.
So then we've got scouts that, you know, that are associated to Armada on the West Coast, North Coast, and we ask them to go around and identify players and look at players as well. So it's a huge network when it's all said and done.
How much are you traveling?
For scouting,
in general, for the Armada, like
I'm
how
heading.
Much are you on the
heading out Friday. We have our women's team, which we haven't spoke about, but we have our general meeting this weekend in Oklahoma. So I'll be there with the other presidents and owners and so on, talking about women's soccer.
I feel like you're flying all over the place. You were just in Miami. Yeah,
it's been busy. It's been the academy, the pro academy. We're down in Miami this past weekend and had a successful weekend, specifically our under-19s beating Inter Miami,
That's a big deal.
A big one. It was a good one. It was a great statement. So yeah, it's busy, but good.
Did you get a selfie with Messi?
I did not. You know what? I'm not one of those individuals, if I'm honest. Like I've been fortunate to obviously meet some you know, really pretty famous people, not just across sports, but I just don't. I'm trying to respect their, you know.
Yeah.
With you guys having the success with the U23, now while guys leave, did it actually help the recruiting because y'all were winners when it came to refilling those spots?
Yeah, there's multiple factors that go into it, right? And winning clearly solves a lot of issues.
Yeah, let's go Jags. Come on.
Yeah, just win. Just win.
Winning solves a lot. And, you know, but it also comes down to the environment, the professionalism. We do run it at a very high standard. We pride ourselves on that. The players enjoy that. We are able to recruit talent due to that. And then our actual game model, what we call in soccer, our game model, the way we play the game. So we have a very specific way over the last 10 years that we've created for the Armada team to play. So, for instance, if you watched our women's team, you watched our under-17 pro academy, there will be principles of play that you'll see in the men's under-23 team as well. So we kind of have this philosophy of the club has a vision or a model of play, and each team should represent that model and those principles within the play.
So for like people that don't follow soccer too much, is the Armada more like, are you guys finesse? Are you speed? Are you more defensive?
I'll give you an example. We want to play defensively. We want to play a high press game. So don't get me wrong, there'll be certain times of the game where we have to drop back a little bit, but for the most part we want to be high press, we want to be in your face. If there's certain triggers where, you know, the opposing player has a bad bounce with a touch or their touch is negative, then that's a trigger for us to all go boom,
push
and press. So there are certain principles that we want to see, you know, and that will be identified across all Armada teams. The coaches by all means have, you know, their ability to play certain formations and attack in their certain ways, but for the most part we're hiring a coach based off the club's model and how we want to see it on the field. So
this just shows how naive I am, right? Does that change like coach turnover? I always go back to American football. If you lose for consistently and you're a defensive-minded team, that may change to an offensive-minded team. Like, is that similar? Lifelong...
Yeah, this is our model. This is our philosophy. So the coach that we bring in will scout and recruit that coach. So, for instance, I already have 5-6 coaches in a shortlist that play the way we want an Armada coach to play, right? And if there's anything I've understood and learned over the 20-odd years in the game, is that you have to have consistency on your game model.
Yeah.
If you don't, and I've been unfortunate to see this.
Healthy or not healthy.
Yeah, when players are unsure of what the game model are and unsure of what the tactics are and the philosophy, then it becomes really confusing. And teams don't get success that way. So what we've been able to show, specifically with our U23 programs, for instance, the coach for our U23 programs, he's been with us for 4 years. He played as a player for the Armada when we were pro in NASL. He has only lost 6 games over 4 years. I think we've played like 100 games, right? Wow. So like the reality is, you know, unfortunately those losses keep coming in a final, right? But the reality is we have a clear philosophy, right? So we never want to deter away from what the club model is. and everybody across the whole front office, sporting staff, everybody's on the same page of this is how I'm to play soccer or football.
So going back to right before we started recording, wrote down a bunch of stuff, stadium, the academy, the women's under 23 WPSL, that's recent in the last year. I believe women's soccer seems to be more popular and more talented than men's. Is that on this level as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's changing. And I'll explain. The women have been super successful over the last 10, 15 years, and probably a little longer than that. The reality, though, is, and there's two folds to this. The reality is that other countries across the globe haven't taken women's soccer seriously. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is now changing in Europe. I mean, we are seeing 70,000 fans at games in Europe watching Barcelona women's team, or 40,000 watching Chelsea's women's team. And the rest of the world is starting to heavily invest in women's professional soccer. So overall, we're starting to see women's soccer grow and be taken
internationally
yep. and be taken seriously. Now, on the women's side, domestically, the drive and the ambition and the stability on the women's side has improved and got better. And now we're starting, there was a franchise that was just sold 2 weeks ago to Denver for $115 million in the NWSL, the women's franchise.
Good for them.
Incredible, yeah. Incredible. But they needed a broadcast partner, and I believe it was CBS came in and put a huge broadcast deal down in place for that league now to have some stability. The women, I would say, some people may disagree, but the women just went through a blip. They had a period where they just wasn't as successful as Japan, England, other women's teams across the international footprint. That is now starting to change back. They just brought in a first-class coach, Emma Hayes, who was Chelsea's head coach on the women's team. They are heavily focused on the development again of women's soccer. The youth soccer participation side of women's soccer is incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. And the talent had a little dip through a period, and now it's coming back through. And that's really exciting to see. Now, this is the issue that most women's sports, not just soccer, is facing. And that's the fandom ship of the sport.
Yeah.
Right. But if we look at Kansas City, who are a new NWSL team, they're getting consistently 10 to 15,000 fans a game. Wow. Right. San Diego Wave, I think they're even close to like 20, 30, and over in LA as well. So the mentality is shifting, the change is shifting. And the women's game is now becoming a spectator sport instead of just, hey, we've got some really good athletes, some really good players. So it's a cool period. But there was certainly a little dip, you know, a few years back, and the rest of the world is catching up. So so to your question of women's soccer, you know, it's getting back to where it needs to be, but also the men's side of the US soccer is starting to get to where it needs to be as well.
Yeah, right. I always talk about young kids, whatever stage of life you're in, you kind of look at what's going on with my kids. I look the amount of, we'll stick to boys on this. Under the age of 12, I feel like the last 10 years, soccer or football, whatever term you use, has increased significantly. You played growing up. I just think it's a more, people are leaving American football, baseball a little less. Is that accurate?
It's completely accurate. Yeah. And I think what we're seeing is this real generational transition. And, you know, there's multiple factors to that. There's technology. The fact that I've been here 10 years. So over the last 10 years, we've been able to watch more Premier League games on TV than you can in England. It's just crazy during a weekend. Right. So I know on a Saturday I can wake up and I can watch Premier League until 2 p.m. in the afternoon. You can't do that in England because it's not broadcast on TV during certain periods of time. right? So I think technology has helped. I think awareness of the sport through social media, et cetera, et cetera. There's this one really famous player that went to Inter Miami, right? That brought the global the global viewership up onto Major League Soccer and soccer in America. The investment from these owners in Major League Soccer and in lower league soccer is incredible. I mean, we're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars.
A lot of zeros.
A lot of money to be made. They know.
There's a lot of new stadiums that have been built, you know, and keep being built. MLS have a blueprint now. Take Austin, St. Louis, even Columbus. You know, we were at the All-Star game last summer, and Columbus Crew Stadium is absolutely gorgeous. It is a European high-level soccer stadium, you know, Minnesota. So, you know, the investment's gone into infrastructure as well. So, you know, there's all these multiple factors. And then in 2026, we have the biggest steroid coming to the United States, which is, you know, they're saying that it's going to 20-fold what it is today, the soccer enthusiasts.
What's in 2026?
And that's the World Cup.
Little thing called the World Cup. I like that. Steroids for the American fan base.
Yep.
That'll be interesting.
There's just going to be a ton of people that have never consumed soccer in that nature.
And then you go to a game and it's like,
they're
going to
be blown away by the crowds, by just the athletes. Yeah.
I had a speaking engagement yesterday and I said, well, just think of the Super Bowl. Right.
Times five locations.
It's 10 locations just across the United States.
Let's save that too. By the way, I forgot to set the timer the first half. I think we're close. We got about a minute left till the commercial break. Any more shout outs? You'd mentioned the people involved breaking ground. You talked about coaches specifically. Any shout outs you want to holler at? Because we'll talk about Ruby Brewery in a second.
Yeah, Ruby Beach, they're a good one. Our staff are incredible. And, They put in a lot of time and effort to make all of this happen. The fans, Section 904. Amazing people and our biggest fans and supporters. Our fans in general, right? We have fans that are not just in Section 904. Their support and quite honestly, the brand would not be as strong as it is without those people out there talking about the Armada, pushing the Armada. The ownership group, Robert Palmer, with his investment into the market. He's kept the club alive and the stadium project. I'm sure we can talk a little bit about
some of
the business stuff that's going to go into the stadium, and how we're going to utilize the stadium project for the other companies of RP. So you know, we're very fortunate and very blessed.
Nathan Walter, Jacksonville Armada. That's what the hell just happened. Welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. If you're catching us on the radio show and missed the first half, good news is it's available on your favorite podcast platform under What the Health Just Happened. If you're catching us on the podcast, we don't have commercials. Also, we think we're up on YouTube. I keep talking about that, Trey. We're YouTube live. I don't know anything about YouTube, but I should probably learn about that. We got Nathan Walter with the Jacksonville Armada here, second time on the show. First half, we talked about a lot about soccer in general, the stadium stuff. We're going to do healthy or not healthy. Healthy or not healthy, golfing with me and Pops Pete.
Oh, healthy.
That was a
very
blast.
Healthy.
And Chris from Casper Architecture. Yes. That was a fun round. Healthy or not healthy, dry January.
Healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
I'm enjoying it. I needed it as well.
Healthy or not healthy, fasting.
Oh, healthy.
Healthy.
Yeah. More the mental clarity.
Oh, the discipline, for sure.
You know, I've lost, you know, 6 pounds, I think. But the mental clarity is just, it's real.
Man, I'm going to talk about that for a sec. Have you ever fasted?
I intermediate fast almost every day.
Okay. So, Nathan, you do a 24-hour fast once a week, and then 3 days you're doing a 20-hour fast. Yeah. So you have a four-hour eating window. But this is healthcare related. I don't think if no one's done it, it will, I think, change your life. Like you said, the mental clarity, it's hard the first day or two, and then all of a sudden you don't even notice. So I commend you is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the discipline's a good thing as well.
Yeah.
Like that's what I felt. Like the head feels clear, feels disciplined, like I've enjoyed it.
I'm going to butcher all that and not do dry January. I failed.
Yeah, can I join you?
Yeah. So we love shout outs. Ruby Beach, that's the brewery downtown. I went there yesterday. They have these sweet cans. It's a Mexican lager, Jacksonville Amaro. So shout out to Ruby Beach. I love the shout branding
out,
here.
Shout out.
And also cheers to not cheers. Doing I dry January. You got a coffee.
I need my coffee.
I love having you back. Yeah. Man. But we love shout outs here. Thank you. Go get the beer.
Yeah. Cool thing about the branding, that was local as well. We'll give a shout out. Tim Broderick, local designer, does a bunch of stuff, you know, communications, media, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it's sweet. I just like cool cans too.
Yeah, it was great project. Great beer.
So that transitions too into, let's talk about partnerships in the community. So who are your best partnerships currently? Who do you think in the future, like, we're going to be real tight with them, collaborate?
Yeah.
What you got?
So I can't give too much away if I'm completely honest. So we, you know, the great thing coming out of 2017 with the Armada is that we reset the branding and the value of the branding. And we reset, moving into MLS Next Pro, what the asset value is of the Armada. Unfortunately, in our past, we had a phenomenal start back in 2014. And it was devalued through the ownership change and the league change back in early 2017-ish. So what we've been able to do is reset the value, reset the brand. We've put these assets in place, infrastructure, and the beer and stuff like that, and different cool, you know, we have the Fleet and Footy podcast show during the week. So what we've done is formed all of these assets now. And then joining MLS, we have a blanket value, right? You're now part of what is a close to being a $1 billion viewership across an annual year, across all of MLS's assets, right? So Apple TV is part of that deal, et cetera, et cetera. So as the stadium now is coming on live, we're now starting to finalize a lot of these partnerships. So so that's been important. We've obviously used our front-facing brands from RP companies. So LPT Realty is on the front of the jersey. I don't think that will change. Now we're starting to open up some of these asset classes to different partnerships. So we are in talks with a medical partnership that we're very close to announcing.
It's one of four local. Yeah.
We're very close to announcing that one. That would be fantastic. Yep. We're already somewhat working behind the scenes. They're seeing some of the academy players and some of the U23 players last summer. So that's very close. And then it's really cool. We get to get into real partnerships and finalizing some of these partnerships. I can probably say this one, Campione Law, Chris Campione, for anybody knows.
Oh yeah,
Campione all over, town, all over yep. town. Chris has been a fantastic supporter and he's committed 4 years to our project and has been showing interest in other ways to be involved. So, you know, we're fortunate. We have so many good people and Jacksonville's full of those.
Oh, man, again, I love it here. I'll always compliment Northeast Florida. We have our flaws, but I do like it here.
It's a great place.
So back to the stadium, let's talk about the business side. So breaking ground soon, what's the estimated time where it's done? Let's put belly buttons in those seats.
Yeah, it's about a 12 to 14 month process, right, okay. For phase one. So obviously we have a phased approach to the stadium. Now in phase one, we're going to use what we'll call the mixed-use hospitality area as co-working area during the week. So
Monday through Friday, it's a co-working space.
Co-working space, and we'll have some office space in there for LPTR, which is one of our let's call it right now our biggest entity project under the Robert Palmer Company's umbrella. LPTR is an online brokerage firm.
They're massive now.
Massive. Yeah. I think now, I haven't seen the last data, but I want to say it's close to being in 40 different states. Wow. Canada, it's going
like thousands,
it's going
of
internationally.
Employees.
Yeah. I think 18,000 was somewhere around that number. We were close to agent count across the US. So it's a really exciting time for the entity and for the organization. And their headquarters, specifically the accounting side, is going to be headquartered out of the stadium.
That online somewhere.
Yep, our chief of staff, who's already in market, she'll relocate into that property. So it'll be very cool. We'll have a collaboration across the different entities within the building, and then obviously we'll have the team itself front office operating out of there, and then on game day, it will become a party time.
I'm going to put our man on the spot real quick. Watch this. Will you let us film an episode in the middle of the field?
Let's do it. I'm down for that.
How much fun would that be?
I'm down for that.
Awesome.
A little selfish agenda there. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm down.
So let's say 14 months, it'll be done by the World Cup, right?
It'll be done, yeah, for the 2026 World Cup. As long as things keep moving forward and there's no hiccups along the way. But
we'll cross our fingers.
Yeah.
So that's done. You're going to open it up. Fans come and watch games. Will there be a screen set up? I mean, I'm just trying to, all you fans out there.
Yep.
I think that'd be pretty sick to pack that place out and watch some games.
Yep. Yeah, we did a similar version of that with the Jumbo Shrimp last World Cup.
That's right.
On the US England, and we had, I think it was close to 4,000 fans out at the Jumbo Shrimp. Now we get to kind of do that concept within our own stadium project. So, it's going to be having the asset and the infrastructure. Yeah. Gives us a complete different dimension of a business model. So
it's like a springboard. Right. So if you live here, you're familiar with the Armada, but that, like you said, the infrastructure and that's a big asset. That's like a springboard to open the doors to a lot of different opportunities.
You know, and future developments, you know, there's a couple of phases to that project. There's front facing retail on A. Philip Randolph or what they're going to call Florida Avenue. Yeah. Moving forward, the main street, Florida Avenue, Main Street. Moving forward, there's opportunity for multifamily parking garage on the site. There's opportunity with that front-facing retail on the front of Florida Ave. I'm going to have to get used to saying that. You know, putting some shops in there, some stores, some cool stuff, you know, and just, you know, making it a really cool environment. That whole east side is about to go for a huge rejuvenation, so...
We talked about this off the air, too. The term gentrification is thrown around. Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I believe that. And you can't please everyone. So
yeah, I think, you know, the word that's been used with the east side is intrification. And it's a lovely word. It's a great word to explain what's happening. And, you know, we've got some really great people within that area who take responsibility in some sense for why the area has been what it's been through. And it's been really cool to kind of work with those people, have relationships with those people, understand their vision for the community. And now we get to help be somewhat of a catalyst for that community. You know, a lot of people have been patient and waiting for us to put a shovel in the ground before they start their development. So I do know it's in some ways it's been a burden for some people because it's been such a slow process and they're itching to move their project forward. But they're not going to do it without our project, you know, kicking off. So now we get to see this whole process of intrification within the area and just some really good people working on projects.
I put this in quotation marks, right? You're never going to please everyone. It doesn't matter what you do, politics, like at least 30% of the population is probably not going to agree with a big decision. The free soccer club. Let's talk about that. So in that part of the east side, I think that's pretty cool. You got some kids, you know.
Yeah, Major League Soccer have a program similar to NFL flag football, right? So it's called MLS Go. And three weeks ago, we started a free clinic for children out in the east side. We partnered with the East Side Athletic Association and the Melanin Market in the east side. And every Friday night, we're out there. We have around about 25 kids, and it keeps growing each week. We do some fun soccer stuff, some clinics, some skills, some games. We have parents out there tailgating. It's now become like, you know, hot dogs and burgers after, and music's flowing, and it's such a cool scene. And even the other week when it was freezing cold, everybody showed up still and had a great time. So, you know, look, these are the direct impacts, right? And when you start to see the game at its purest, and that is when the game is truly at its purest, when it's a young 6-7-year-old with a ball,
smiling ear to ear,
kicking the ball, that's true impact. They're memories that even myself, I still reflect on, you know, just there'll be times where sometimes I just grab a ball and I start doing some juggles.
Trey, you played soccer growing up, right?
Whole life, yeah.
And how much did that impact your life?
A lot. I mean, just, I think sports in general, but yeah, I mean, I don't. Soccer's unique. I don't know. People can't see me on camera, but I'm like 5'5", so never going to be a football player. But soccer was a sport, man. I freaking excelled at. So yeah, it's forever in my heart in regards to my upbringing for sure.
Yeah, it goes back to the popularity of the sport in the States. I think right easier access than you don't need pads, right? You don't need helmets. Grab a ball, go out there, run around, and kick that
dang thing. Well, all shapes and sizes can thrive in soccer. I don't think you're limited. I think that's the unique thing that soccer's positioned is that the best player in the world, what, 5'6"?
Exactly.
How old is Messi? How tall is Messi?
I think he's around 5'6", 5'7". But he was also he was meant to be like 5'3", 5'4", and he went through some hormone growth therapy him to like 5'6", 5'7". I think, but.
How tall is Cristiano Ronaldo? He looks
6'1", 6'2". He's a big boy. He's an athlete. That guy is a racehorse.
Yeah. He could probably play just about any sport. Who do you guys have, Messi or Ronaldo?
You can really piss some people off.
That's what I want. Like
probably Messi just for the size
You've got to go on achievements. And Messi's won the World Cup. You know,
and that's the biggest stage.
And you can't even look at the Portugal and Argentina team and think they're two worlds apart, because that Argentina team that won the World Cup, I mean, I didn't think they were in the top four or five teams of winning the World Cup. So, you know, and when you look at that final, Messi really did just pull it on his back and do it. And at his age, you know, not being a young Messi, being an older Messi, I mean, it's pretty incredible. Yeah. The whole story. That's when I think it changed for me.
That's when
I truly
put him.
Yeah, yeah. Because you couldn't pull him apart in my mind.
Yeah.
During that, and then he did that and he won that. It completely changed.
I think that the funny, we talk about youth getting more and more interested in soccer. If you ask kids like sixth grade and under who's the best, they'll go at it. Like thinking of my son and his buddies, they'll argue. Half of them are Messi, half of them are. It's like the LeBron versus MJ argument. It's fun to watch. You said you want to stir the pot, ask some kids to argue over who's
I'm
better.
Glad the kids are talking about that, because I think we're probably a part of the era where, I mean, not many people were talking soccer when I was growing up. Now it's just everywhere.
I get the biggest giddy when I pull up to my daughter's school and drop her off, and I see a couple of jerseys being worn.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
I absolutely love it.
I got a couple of questions for you in regards to the team. Do you guys house the team? How does that work? Like the players, the professionals?
That's a great question.
And then also, with all this growth coming, I have to ask, is there incentive for these guys to make some more cash in regards to all the growth?
Yeah. So the U23s, we put them up during the summer, because obviously we have players coming in, right? So we put them in a couple of apartments and they have fun and it's a good time.
I bet they do.
They've been really well behaved.
Jacksonville Beach, all over the place.
They've been really well. Yeah, we live in a terrible place. Do not come during the summer. You know, in the past, we've had player housing and stuff like that. We still haven't decided what we'll do in regards to that, because it's changed a little bit. You know, if you can take the payment you're paying for the apartments or whatever, and maybe stick it in their salary, maybe
they'd rather
that's a
have that
way
in their
to
bank
do
account.
It. Or, you know, there's just different. There's just different ways to do it. In regards to compensation, there's performance bonuses, you know.
Could you break that, like, so if dude scores a goal, goalie saves, is
yeah,
that
it depends. Depends how crazy you want to
get,
right? Some clubs get crazy with it. Some clubs, you know, in the past we've tried little things to see if it works and so on and so on. But I mean, you can get really silly or you can get pretty blanket with it.
Sure.
And you know, but yeah, score, you know, if you hit a striker, right? You hit 10 goals per season, you get X amount. If you hit 15 goals, you get X amount.
Love it.
I look at too, you talk about sponsorship. So this continues to grow in popularity. I keep going back to American football. I'm sorry. That's just what I've been accustomed to.
Sure.
NIL money for college kids. Is there opportunities? If your two or three best players are charismatic, popular, can they go to a car dealership?
No.
Hey, Bob, we're going to give you this Cadillac. Just to drive around,
212 benefits.
Give us a couple
sponsor.
Commercials. That's right. We'll put some 212 benefits stuff on.
Yeah, no, I mean that happens. It's happened.
Nice.
I've witnessed it in England as well. You know, most of the first team players had like personal sponsors that, you know, got to have game day experiences and so on and so on. So yeah, it's certainly normal and can happen. Absolutely.
I'm gonna go
If these boys keep winning, we need to throw some money
just,
their way.
Just win. That's like, I'm just keep them put aside. Winners.
Just win. We got. Can we go personal for a little bit?
Yeah,
like a little story. I think so. Just got on the board of directors for the Jack's Chamber.
Congrats. Shout out.
That's exciting. Is that a big deal for you? Is that one of those things like, ah, cool, whatever. It's another stamp on my resume.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty humble when it comes to all this type of stuff. And again, if someone had told me 10 years ago, you are where you are today, I hope probably.
So who the hell are you talking about?
Who you're talking about, you know, but you know, it's nice to reflect and it's an opportunity to be around some really high level people and to grow and be more connected and so on and so on. So I'm so thankful and fortunate for the opportunity and just how can I help? How can I help our community? You know, it's the mentality really.
That's one of the questions I ask almost anyone is like, how can I help?
Yeah.
And sometimes is it an introduction? Is it a conversation? Is it advice? Which, you know, usually my advice is just throw it away. That's not good advice. Shout out to the Jack's Chamber. Like they've been great just in general. They're great for the community.
We have amazing leadership and, you know.
Yeah, the Jack's Chamber, I think is one of the best. I would argue one of the best chambers in the country. If you hear this in your local business and you're not part of the Jack's Chamber, like you need to get on that.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal community and Daniel's leadership and everything that goes around it and the executive board's leadership. I mean, we have some really, really talented people.
We talk about this too, philanthropy side. So the Down Syndrome Association, you're the president of the board for that?
Yeah, board president of the SAJ. And so again, it's just one of those, you know, it was an opportunity, basically a family on my street. And the best way is to say it is they had a son with Down Syndrome who's similar to my age. And we took an amazing, incredible bond together. And he's been amazing with my daughter and my daughter's been around it. And, you know, fortunately, I got the opportunity to sit on the board. And then the board president was having a little changeover and they were like, hey, you want to jump in? And I'm like,
why not? Oh. I got all this spare time.
I mean, you know, I'm fortunate I got great people around and but it's been so fulfilling. I mean, the buddy walk for anybody who lives in Jacksonville, the buddy walk's our biggest fundraiser, anywhere between 300,000 and 400,000 on that event. And last year to look across and just see the sea of people standing up on that stage and just it blew me away. I mean, we probably had close to 1,000, you know, families there and just, you know, 10,000 to 12,000 people walking down the beach. I mean, the beachgoers who are sitting there who have no idea this buddy walk's about to walk down with all these people with differences walking down and with Down syndrome. And it truly is one of those really special moments in life where you can see the genuine impact and the impact that organization has on physical therapy, on speech therapy, on swimming lessons. You know, we even do soccer and stuff like that.
Heck
and
yeah.
Boxing and, you know, and the inclusion now that people with Down syndrome have within our community is just, it's very cool to see. And I get to see an overcast of all the stuff that's going on and have a little play, you know, within it to just, it's good fun and it's good people. And
I got
just
chills.
Fortunate.
I have chills, right? I have a jacket on too. The hair on my arm is standing up a little bit. That's creepy that I just said that out loud, by the way. This is a tough one. What are you most, the last 10 years, whether it's personal or not, like what are you most proud of?
It's easy. It's easy because I didn't truly understand, these principles of life. And that's being a father and being a husband.
Amen.
Shout out to that.
All the fathers, husbands, wives too, truth. All you moms out there. Something happens when those kids come that just everything changes.
I failed epically.
Early.
And so career driven, so like work driven, so like, you know, this was the best way to explain it. I remember I was actually cutting the yard, I think, one day. And something was just bugging me. And I'm, you know, texting with the wife indoors and she's indoors, I'm outdoors. And I said something about legacy. And she was like, you're so selfish. And I was like, well, you know, I think the sport, I was on about like the sport being my legacy and stuff. She goes, the only legacy is your kids.
Bro, you're dropping truth bombs. Dude, hey, if it makes you feel any better, I'm in the same boat. Like, if I didn't work from home, I don't know if I'd be around my kids nearly as much.
It hits so deep. Like, it was like, damn, you selfish individual. And, you know, and then it's been a process from there, really. Like, generally, it's still an ongoing process, right? And, you know, you want to keep being the best you can be. And my focus was to be the best general manager, the best president, the best coach, the best this. And I was so far removed from being the best father, the best husband. And that's been a focus of mine for easily the last 4 or 5 years.
And you notice a difference. I
hope so. You know, my wife is really, my wife and kids, they see that more than anything. Right. But, I'd like to say it's been a good journey and I'm making progress, right? And when things get tough, and they do, like we have multiple things going on, I can be an emotional individual as well. I can be passionate and driven. And it leads into kind of some of the conversations we had over Christmas about faith and, you know, those pieces. It's all been a work in progress, and I feel I'm starting to have a good understanding from health to faith to family, like where I need to play in within the next, you know, 5 to 10 years is probably the best way to say it.
And what I think we'll talk as husbands and fathers and men in general. Occasionally, we talk about getting kicked in the front end in soccer. Sometimes you got to get kicked right in the teeth and reprioritize. I appreciate you sharing that, by the way. Some people are a little skeptical to share that stuff.
Hey, man, we're all in it.
Yeah.
We're all in it.
We're in the trenches right now.
It's the reality, right? It's reality of life. And, you know, we should be able to talk about this stuff and we should be able to be honest about it.
Agreed.
So, tell you get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree.
Man. Here we go again.
I'm looking at the clock.
It's like literally ticking down. That was, man, I appreciate you joining us. However we can support, sharing information, getting involved. I'm going to ask you about the Down Syndrome. Is it Society Association? I'd love to get involved with that. Thanks for joining us, man. Nathan Walter, Jacksonville Armada. Appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you. Thanks for everything you do, and go Armada.
That's what the hell just happened.